I'm Pete Donaldson from the Football Ramble. This winter is going to be a festival of football as we fill our homes with friends, put on the footy and get cosy. There's never been a better time to upgrade your TV, and John Lewis have a range of LG TVs packed with the latest OLED technology, offering pixel-perfect details and brilliant colour fidelity, all with a 5-year guarantee. Dolby Vision IQ and Dolby Atmos offer total immersion, and an ultra-wide viewing angle means everyone in the room gets the same great picture. Feel like you're there with an LG OLED TV. Shop LG TVs at John Lewis, in-store, online, or via the app.
Is this a wind-up? This has to be a wind-up.
Apart from the birth of my children, this is the best phone call I've ever received in my life.
This is what it sounds like when people win big with the National Lottery. Will you be next? The National Lottery. Your numbers make amazing happen. Rules and procedures apply. Players must be 18 or over.
You're listening to Dropping the Gloves with former NHL All-Star John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of podcasts and delivered by DoorDash.
John Scott, the All-Star man. John Scott, the family man.
Thank you for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott.
Woo! Yeah! Hello, everybody. Welcome to Dropping the Gloves with Tim Wurzberger and John Scott. Thanks for joining us, everybody. I hope you had a good weekend. I kind of did. Nothing to write home about. You know what happened, Tim? Before I get into this topic, I'm very heated about. So I got all my wood stacked, got all my wood split, everything, and it snowed. So I didn't have a chance to put a tarp on it because it had been raining. And so now it snowed pretty good this weekend, but looking outside, it looks like it's all melted somehow. Must be warm outside. Now the wood's all wet. So I'm just like, what do you do? Because then you put a tarp on it and freezes and it doesn't have time to air out. And you don't know what it's like to heat your house with wood. You're a one percenter. You have a furnace. So you don't understand what it's like living off grid like me.
Speaking of furnaces, my buddy, his blew last week. So he's got like a 1-year-old kid. Him and his wife moved up to his parents for the time being because it's going to be a while to fix it. And it's going to be like 20K minimum to fix it. And he's like, him and his wife
20K?
Are. Yeah, maybe not the furnace, the heater, something like that, like something that heats the house, whatever it was. And he was like, that was the low end. And he was just like, and I think part of that factored the rush job, but he was like, my wife and I are both teachers. We need it cheap, but we also need it now. So like, what can we do? And it's tough being a homeowner. You learn lessons pretty quick.
Hey, I tell you what, the beautiful thing about having a wood stove, not that my listeners care, but you get heat all the time, regardless. Power's out, apocalyptic war. We get invaded by Russia. I can still heat my house at all times.
And it never smells smoky in the house.
If we get a little bit of a backdraft, because you know I live up on that big hill, so if the wind's blowing, it'll blow down the chimney and it'll force the smoke down, but very rarely. Once you get that suction going of the heat and the hot air to the cold air, it naturally pulls it up. Very rare does it still smell smoky. If I let it go out, which I don't usually do now, that fire got started last week. There will be a hot coal in that fireplace for the next 5 months. So it'll be a perpetual fire for 5 straight months, which is kind of cool. But it's a pain. I had 12 and a half cords of wood and it's just sitting there with snow on top of it. So I think I'm going to bust out the leaf blower or broom it, just walk on top of the pile and broom it off. I don't know what I'm going to do. Maybe it's melted already and I'll just cover it up and then uncover. Nobody cares about that. Moving on. How was your hike? You said you're going to climb a mountain.
I did. I found a mountain and I climbed it. It was really nice. It was a shorter hike, but a steeper hike at Kings Mountain here, not too far from Charlotte. Really nice. Second or third one.
Trail. A gravel trail, I'm guessing.
Not gravel. No. Yeah, groomed trail. Yeah.
Groomed.
And then, okay. And like you get to the top, it's all rocks and stuff, but it was pretty good. Pretty view.
What was the view of?
Just land, just forests and farms in every direction.
Here's a question. Cool. Ideal view. If you could have a house anywhere in the world, would you rather look over like a mountainscape, a plainscape, like countryside, or ocean?
Water or any kind. Water of some kind. Like the views in Traverse City were pretty special. Some of those houses on the peninsula and stuff. So something like that, I think, would be the best.
I'm lucky enough to have both. My house in Northport has water views, and it gets old, the water, because you just look out and it's just, it's water. Water again. And then I have another house that has a view of water and trees and landscape. I think, like, in West Virginia, in the Smokies, those houses, they have the views of the mountains and the valleys and the mist in between. I would take that. Those are incredible to me. I think water, maybe this is me being a one percenter, but it just gets old. It's like, oh, it's water again. It doesn't change much. Whereas trees, the leaves, the snow, they fall. The snow, when it's on the trees, it's really, it's neat looking.
I think it does change. The colors, the how active and ripply it is, the sunset, the way it catches the light. John, you gotta pay a little more attention. Just slow down a little bit from time to time and just take a minute.
It's still water, though. It's just water. I don't know. Enjoy it. It's nice. Have you been to my house in Northport?
No. No, you told me I'm not allowed.
That was a smart call by me, actually, now that I think of it. You know, when you just got an inkling about somebody, it was good. It was a good call. All right. Moving on. I was fired up. I saw there was a heavyweight battle. Who's the toughest guy in the NHL? There was a fight between Nick Deslauriers and Mathieu Olivier from Columbus. I don't know much about Olivier, but apparently he's a tough fighter. And so I click on the link. I'm on hockeyfights.com where I watch all my fights. You guys should watch them there too. It was such... And Nick Deslauriers, in my eyes, is the most entertaining fighter in the NHL right now. Him or Tanner Janot. Those two guys just throw caution to the wind and they just chuck them. And I go into this fight expecting great things. And it was just, I was cringing the whole time. And not because it was a bad fight, not because the guys weren't energetic. I cringe because of the visors. And I'll tell you why. I have fought hundreds of times, maybe not hundreds, but over 100 times on the ice. The thing that scared me the most is when I would fight a guy with a visor. It didn't happen often. But when I fought a guy with a visor, I always made sure to get the helmet off because the worst possible thing in my eyes was catching my knuckle or the top of my hand on his visor and just splitting my hand right open. Visors are sharp. Visors are dangerous. And not just for me. If I catch a visor square and it cracks and I hammer that visor into that guy's face who I'm fighting, it cuts him wide open quicker and more dangerous than any fist ever could. It's amazing how sharp those stinking visors are. So when I see a guy fight like Pat Maroon, who wears his visor up on his head and not even covering his eyes, that's even worse because you're coming right down the pipe and his visor's angled right up. Komarov used to wear his visor like that. So going back to this Deslauriers-Olivier fight, these guys have learned how to fight with visors now. They use it as a shield, which it is for their face. It's like Captain America. When a bullet comes, he puts his shield up. When a punch comes, these guys lower their head and like they use their eye visor to block the punch. You go watch that fight. I don't know. I don't like it. I think it's dangerous. And I know there's no end game for this, but it really irked me. I don't like visors, and I watch all these fights now. Every single fight is two guys, and they are just waiting for something bad to happen. No punches really connect, and it's just a bad fight. Then I watched a fight like Ryan Reeves, Tanner Janot, another heavyweight battle. Revo had to get his bucket off before he could really start chucking. If you watched a fight, Ryan was tentative, and Ryan, I feel bad for the guy. He has to go into every fight at a disadvantage because he's one of the few guys who doesn't have a visor these days, and he's fighting these robots with visors over their eyes, and they go in and their chin straps taped on, and they have an added advantage right away because your surface area where you have to punch has gone from your face to like 7 inches, a jaw in the bottom of your nose. That's it, because you don't want to punch him on the visor, you don't want to punch him in the helmet. It's frustrating because I love fighting. Everybody loves fighting that I know. Most hockey fans on the large love fighting. And I don't see it ever going back to the way it was. Ever. I enjoyed fighting Kyle MacLaren, George Parros, Matt Karkner, all these guys where it was just like, we're just going to punch each other in the face. That's all we're going to do. There's no fear of breaking your hand or cutting your hand or hurting somebody else when you throw a punch with their visor. It's who's tougher. Let's just punch. You know, the worst thing would happen is you punch a guy in the helmet and you might crack your knuckle. So be it. I don't know. It just, I don't like it. You're not, I don't know. I'm not trying to throw shade. You're not a fighter. Am I blowing this up? Am I just making a big deal of this? Because I really, it really bothers me when I see two guys fight now.
Well, here's my take.
For whatever reason, I don't like it.
Yeah, I understand. I understand everything you're saying, especially like I have a visual of you punching someone and catching the bottom of their visor and it's just like skinning your hand as you come back. You know what I mean? Like it's just that stuff. It freaks me out. I don't like it. And I can see why that would be something that changes the whole dynamic of the fight. But the visors are there to protect them, right? And so when you think about the worst thing that can happen in a fight is not that you cut your hand. Like it's the head injury, the TBIs, all that stuff. Isn't that a bigger priority than, and I'm not saying the visor necessarily helps with that, but put this in perspective, cutting your hand or breaking your hand is one of the things that is an inherent risk of fighting and not necessarily like the longest term impact of all the things that could go wrong. Right.
Yeah, I get the helmet. Everybody remembers the George Parros incident when he was fighting Colton Orr and he fell down. And he didn't have his helmet on. I get it. I just don't like the visors. I really don't. I don't think they should have made them mandatory. Whatever. The league's changed. Who is going to be the last guy standing with no visor in your eyes? There's not very many of them. From my research, there's only Ryan Reeves, the Benn brothers, Lucic, Matt Martin, Ryan O'Reilly. Who's going to be the last guy standing in the NHL to go down in the history books as the Craig McTavish of his era, not wearing a visor? Because there are very few left, Tim. Dying breed.
Yeah, whoever plays the longest, I guess. I would guess off the top of my head.
Oh, good answer. Good answer, well, Tim. Whoever plays the longest. This O'Reilly. Is the kind of material you guys can get used to on Dropping the Gloves. Really good insight, Tim.
Whoever scores more goals is going to win. No, but O'Reilly, wow. Among that wow. list, he's probably the youngest, right? In that crew, he doesn't seem like he's as old as some of the other guys. It hasn't been around as long. So I would say probably him, but I could also see Lucci because he doesn't seem like he wants to slow down or retire anytime soon. So I would pick one of those two.
But yeah, I think Ryan O'Reilly would be my pick. And if not him, I would take one of the Benn brothers. But yeah, whoever does play the longest, I think will have that.
Well, have because that they could bring in a visor if they wanted to at any point, right?
Right. Like Zach Bogosian didn't wear a visor. Now he wears one. Zach Cassian, I don't think, wears a visor. But yeah, out of those guys, I think
Goodbranson.
He plays the least physical. I think Goodbranson wears one now, too. Yeah, whatever. Unbelievable, that answer.
It's a good answer. I'm saying
it speaks volumes of our podcast.
cut that.
Just, all right. Another thing that's happening in the NHL these days, Tim, other than the lack of visors, is the lack of solid goaltending play. Coming into this season, you and I did a fantasy draft. Everybody in the world who watches hockey is in a fantasy league, most likely. Even if you're not, you're a fan of hockey. And what is one of the most important things for a team is the goaltender. They win and lose you games. If you have a bad goaltender, you will have a bad hockey team. It goes hand in hand. But one thing that we could set our clock to coming into this season, we thought there were a handful of guys who were absolute studs. Lock them in. They're going to be Vezina candidates. They're going to be in the Hart candidate trophy mix. These guys are going to make long playoff runs. That's it. Nothing to worry about. Plug and play these guys for 60 games and you have a solid goaltender. Until this year, you pulled up some stats and I knew some goaltenders were struggling. I wasn't aware the extent of how bad goaltending has been this year across the board, across the NHL. Andrei Vasilevskiy, Jakob Markstrom, Jacob Markstrom, Jussi Saros, Frederik Anderson, Thatcher Demko, Sergei Bobrovsky, Tristan Jarry, Jack Campbell, John Gibson, all of these guys at one time or another in their career has been in the conversation for a Vezina trophy or has won a Vezina trophy or is in the conversation of best goaltender in the NHL at one point in their career. All of these guys, there's five, nine of them are having terrible seasons so far. And maybe some of them is not because they're playing bad. Some of them have a bad team in front of them. Others are just playing terrible. What is your take on this? Because you're the one who unearthed this for us. What's going on in the NHL with these top-tier goaltenders, Tim?
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's a flip side to this where there are, like, goalies who are playing way better than we thought they were capable of, like the Logan Thompsons and the Husos and Allmark and the guys like that that are just unbelievable. But there is something to be said for all this. And I started looking into this because I knew that Vasilevsky was underperforming. So I was kind of like looking at his stats, and he's got 5 wins, but his goals against is 3.1 and save percentage is 898, which is way, both of them way below his career average. And he's not that old. I think he's 29, right? So it's not like he's just getting up there. And then you start looking at other guys around the league who you thought would just be like the cream of the crop. And you mentioned these names. I'll go down the list of their stats. Markstrom, 287 goals against, 895 save percentage. Saros, 322, 901. Anderson, 272, 891. Demko, 402, 874 is probably the worst of the bunch. Bobrovsky, 329, 897. Jarry, 355, 900. Campbell, 427, 873. John Gibson, 447, 888. These are dumpster numbers. These are garbage pail numbers. And it's crazy because we had talked, you know, throughout the season, sort of anecdotally about the high scoring numbers and the picking the over and the bet US picks and all this. And I think it's more than just anecdotal. I think there's something going on here with these goalies for whatever reason. The offense is up. It almost feels like, you know, when baseball changes the ball and all these guys start hitting home runs and the pitcher's ERA goes up. That's kind of what it feels like, except there's no explanation for it.
I think it's indicative of just the way people play the game now. I think you're seeing a new crop of players that have been coming into the league for the last 10 years, now 15 years. I saw it at the tail end of my career where the draft picks would come in and they would all be uber skilled. Hands, hockey IQ, through the roof. Just, they've been training their whole life to make the NHL, and you could tell, and they arrived, and they're all just very, very, very talented. From the first rounder down to the seventh rounder, every single guy, the one thing they had in common were they had impeccable hands, impeccable talents. Whereas when I first came into the league, I ran across first rounders who, they were good faceoff guys, and they worked hard. Their hands, not so great. And that was common, where they were a specialist in one aspect or another. But they didn't have the total package. They weren't like toe dragging and sauce passing and be able to handle the puck in a phone booth. As I grew older in my career, the younger guys just got better and better and better. And I think you're seeing this translate into just better offenses. Gone are the days when it's a shutout. You have 5 games and 2 of them are going to be a shutout. That was the norm when I started playing. When I first jumped into the career, what is it now, 20 years ago, you would expect to have a shutout every single night if there's 5 or 6 games. Now it's rare when there's a shutout. I don't know what the stats look like for goalies now, but I would be surprised if a goalie has 3 shutouts this early in the season. Because how many games? What is it, Tim?
They have 3 goalies with 2 shutouts and no one has 3.
Isn't that insane? There's just no shutouts anymore. And I think this is indicative of A, players just are so skilled nowadays from top to bottom, first line to fourth line, all the defenders, they work on their hands. And I think coaching has changed a little bit. I think it's a copycat league. Everybody wants to run and gun. Everybody's not, they don't want to be left behind. So they're just working on offense, 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 offense. And no one really stresses the defensive side of the puck anymore. Or what do you think?
So you think this is more about the game on the ice rather than, because it sounds like, I mean, the goalies are progressing just as much as the forwards have in the last 10 or 20 years between the playing style, the pads they wear, all that. And so, but do you think the forwards are moving along more quickly, or is it more just the way that the game is played on the ice in front of them?
Well, I think the evolution of a player, I think, yes, the scores overall are better back. And I hate saying this, back in my day, but it's the truth. You would have one high end scoring line that was just lights out. That was your scores. And then you'd have a second, third, and fourth line who weren't really expected to do much. The fourth line was fighters. The third line was the penalty kill guys. And the second line would maybe chip in a goal every third game. But it was the first line who would put the points up. And the defenseman never really did much. Like when I came into the league, it was Brent Burns. And he was all over the map. He wasn't the Brent Burns like he is now. But after Brent Burns, it was all stay-at-home defenseman types. And then one power play specialist who was awful in their own end. But like it was Martin Skoula's, Kim Janssen's, it was the Nick Schultz. It was those types of players who were not offensively gifted at all, but could make a decent first pass and were just responsible. And then you'd have a Marc-Andre Bergeron who had a boomer of a cannon shot, but was lost in his own zone. And every team had that. Nowadays, there's defensemen who are up in the rush. They're responsible defensively. It's a completely different game from when I entered the league. Every line is dangerous for the most part now. You have teams that have four lines that can score. We saw with Tampa Bay, the reason they won the Stanley Cup. Their fourth line was producing more than their first line. So to say that the goalies are getting better, yes, I agree with that. But I just think the players they've evolved a lot more than the goaltenders have. Yes, the goaltenders are getting better athletes playing goaltender. Back in the day, the athletes would play center. They would play left wing. And then the bigger, slower guys would play defense. And then the leftovers would play goaltender. Now you're getting athletes playing goaltender. You're getting offensive guys playing defense. And all the forwards are just working on their hands nonstop. And I just think everyone's better. But there's more offensively gifted players now in the NHL than there ever has been. So that's helping the goaltending. And then I just don't think coaches coach defense much anymore. I really don't. I think it's an offensively driven game. Gary Bettman's been pushing this for years and years and years and years. And that's why it's not abnormal to see 7, 8, 9 goals from one team in one game. Every night you check the box score, it's like 6-3, 7-4. Unless you hit the over like me and you press it on Friday and then you're waiting for the Stars Sharks game and it's 1-0. I'm like, what the hell? I needed you guys to score 3 goals and it's a 1-0 game. But that's just me losing my gambling bet. Another thing I wanted to look at is, okay, these goalies are struggling. Is it just the goalie struggling, or are they on a bad team, a bad defensive team? So you go to a team like Carolina, always good defensively, just a great defensive team. So you go, okay, Freddie Anderson's struggling. What's Antti Raanta doing? Antti Raanta's playing fine. His save percentage is right bang on his career average, .911. His goals against is .247. He's fine. So that means Freddie Anderson's playing bad. You go to another good defensive team like Calgary. Jacob Markstrom, you mentioned his stats, his backup, Dan Vlader, worse than Markstrom. So you start to think, maybe it's Calgary. Maybe it's not the goaltenders. Maybe it's the actual team. So we'll have to see how that shakes out. But everybody knows that a Daryl Sutter team is really sound defensively. So I think it's the goalies in Calgary. Then you go to a team like Tampa Bay with Vasilevsky. How's Brian Elliott do it? Vasilevsky, .898/.310. Brian Elliott, .895/.327. Not much better. It makes me think it's the defense in Tampa Bay, not the goaltenders. They lose Ryan McDonagh. Everybody's getting a little bit older. Victor Hedman's been in and out with injuries. Could be the defense in Tampa Bay that's just not there for the team. Because I look at a goalie like Jordan Binnington. Everybody's getting on him. Oh, he's this and that. You watch a St. Louis Blues game, Jordan Binnington's playing pretty damn good. Yes, everybody blows up his blow-ups when he's getting pulled and he's trying to fight other goaltenders and chirping the bench of L.A., he's playing pretty good. Scandella's been out for a long time. Krug is a shell of his former self. Falk is okay. Nick Leddy's playing terrible. Colton Parenko's playing terrible this year. So everybody's just throwing all the blame on Jordan Binnington. He's playing not bad. His numbers are atrocious. His numbers are awful. But I don't think he's playing as bad as his numbers shows. The last team, I think, Nashville. Always known, much like Calgary, to have a good defensive system. They don't take many chances. They are sound defensively. UC Saros struggling. From what we saw last year, we expected this guy just to have an MVP-type season. He's got .901/.322. Kevin Lankinen's playing pretty darn good. He's got .921/.260, which makes me think UC Saros is just having a bad year. That's a good gauge of if the goaltender is really struggling. check the backup stats. If the backup is kind of mirroring the starter, that means it's just the team. If the backup's playing fine, then that goalie's struggling. So a couple goaltenders are struggling. A lot of the time, though, Tim, it's just the goalies take a brunt of the blame. But there's a bigger underlying theme here where it's the teams aren't playing defense. And that poor Jack Campbell. Edmonton's just a bad defensive team. John Gibson, the guy gets a million shots against a game. I don't know. What do you think? Is it the goaltender playing bad, Tim? Or is it what I think? It's just this is not a defensive league anymore.
It's a little bit of both. I mean, another example, Bobrovsky's been playing really poorly. And then you got Spencer Knight, friend of the show. He's got 5 wins. He's 231, 922, and he's got a shutout to his name. So it's a great example of just Bobrovsky not playing well. And I think they were hoping that that would sort of be the case. Obviously, they wanted to play well, but if they can, Florida specifically, get Knight the reins and figure out either a trade partner or a buyout situation for Bobrovsky, that accelerates, that lengthens their window. But I think there's something to be said for all this, because where there's smoke, there's fire. There's enough data here that I feel I didn't even include Binnington, but he would fit right in with this stuff. I don't think the expectations were quite as high, but there's clearly something in the water here. And so is it a good thing for the league? Like these high scoring games and these goalies that are, I mean, you know, for every Tristan Jarry and Demko who are underperforming, you got Ottinger and Sorokin and Husso and Ullmark and those guys who are performing pretty well. So it kind of evens out, right?
I think there's more goaltenders struggling than more goaltenders having a really strong season. It'll make it interesting, Vezina, when we come down to it. Because it's right now it's Ullmark and Shesterkin. And I guess you could throw Hellebuck in there. Because Logan Thompson, you're not going to give him much. He's a rookie. He will level out. But gosh, Ullmark's been playing great. But I don't know. I think it's more a systematic thing. I really do. I think gone are the days when goaltenders are going to put up 12 shutouts. And what did Markstrom get last year? He had something ridiculous.
Six or seven.
Yeah, so I just think shutouts are going to be a thing of the past. I think Gary Bettman wanted scoring. Fans love goals. They love to see a nice 7-6 games. It's exciting. It just, I don't know. It depends on what kind of fan you are. I enjoy a 2-1 game where it's a hard fought, grind it out, every inch of the ice you got to earn. It's just not our society anymore. Hockey is a microcosm, Tim. Let's really break into this of society
really makes you
as
think.
A whole. Yeah, we really are going to dig into this and go into the whole in-depth what every play means. But is goaltending really that important at the end of the day? Yeah.
Yes.
It is. Yeah. You got to have a good goaltender.
It's not just the goalies that are struggling, too. We talked about some of the underachieving skaters and forwards, defensemen. I put together a list of just a few that grabbed my eye. And number one is Huberto, who had, what, 100, how many points last
115,
year? 115. Yeah. And he's got just one goal and 5 assists on the year. Part of me, I don't know what to make of this, because is it a little bit of like this? Sometimes there's a down year after signing a massive deal and coming off a big contract year, and he put everything he had into last season. So maybe there's just not that quite the mental state there. It could be the chemistry, not playing with Barkov. He doesn't have the same. I mean, credit to Kadri. I think he's a very good player, and some of the other centers they have, Elias Lindholm, but those guys aren't Barkov. And so there's a clearly, is it just timing? Do you think he'll be back? Do you think, you know, he'll finish with above 80 points? Do you think we're seeing the beginning of a trend for him?
Yeah, I don't know. This is very unlike him. He's been a consistent 100 point performer for the last, what, few years, or at least a point per game guy because of injuries and COVID, obviously, but he's been a solid performer for the last 4 years. He's been bumped down to the third line. Like it's not looking good for Jonathan Huberto right now. And Daryl Sutter is the type of coach that you don't want to mess with. If you come in and have a bad first impression with him, it's a long way to gaining his trust again. So right now he's playing with Trevor Lewis and Backlund on the third line. He's been kicked off of Lindholm's line with Tyler Toffoli. He didn't even get bumped down to Kadri's line with Mangiapane. I think he, and I don't want to, players these days are so emotional, Tim. I think he came into this season with a chip on his shoulder. He was upset that he got dealt from Florida. He felt he was the key piece of that Florida Panthers team, and he did not like to be traded. Well documented. and he came into this season and really wanted to succeed. And maybe he tried a little bit too hard in the offensive end, sacrificed himself defensively, and it just didn't work out. And he's mentally spent right now. Because this point last season, he had 14 or 15 points through the first 10 games, 6 points in 11 games, which isn't bad for the average player. But when you just sign a big ticket for 8 years, what do you get? $64 million, something big like that over 8 years. So I didn't expect it. I thought he was going to come out and crush it. I expected him to be in the MVP chase again this year. But boy, oh boy, he is not playing well. What a luxury that Calgary has, though. The fact that they can just say, you know what? You're going to play the third line. We're going to bump you down. You're our future. You're our present. You're our big ticket that we signed in the offseason. We're going to throw you in the third line. And we're still going to win. So good for Sutter to have the chutzpah to do that, but he will turn it around eventually. He has to. He's too good. His track record's too good for him to stay in this situation for this long.
I think you're probably right. By the way, he signed 10.5 for 8 years, so $80 million. It's a lot of money.
That's a lot of coin. That's
and that doesn't even kick in until next year.
Yeah.
So,
it's a lot of money.
Yeah. So he's one. Another one, Kyle Connor. And I think he's heating up a little bit. He hasn't really scored much yet because he had 47 goals last year and he has just 2 on the season. He's strung together a handful of assists over the past couple of games. And I think the Winnipeg Jets are playing pretty well. But you look at like his shooting percentage over the last couple of seasons. And I'll just go back to 5 years, 16.15, 14.98, 15.9, 15.7, 14.8, basically like exactly the same every single year. And then this year is 4.2, very similar to DeBrincat that we talked about last week. Just the shooting percentages are way low, the averages. You'd expect those to climb back up to the mean. So I don't think he's obviously probably not going to score 47 again this year. I don't think he's a 15 goal scorer either. I think he'll pick it up and probably end up with 30 to 35 on the season, I hope, because I own him in fantasy. But yeah, it's another player that's gotten off to a slow start.
Yeah, but like you said, he's got 10 assists. He's chipping in other ways. Kyle Connor, I like him. He is a type of guy who, yes, you like it. If he scores 47 goals or whatever he had last year, that's fantastic. But even if he doesn't, he'll still be valuable in so many other ways. And Winnipeg, I tell you what, Tim, they're having a good year. We talked about them last week. I like Winnipeg. It's very rare when you have the star power that they have, the Scheifele, the Dubois, the Connors, the Wheelers. Your leading scorer is a defenseman, Josh Morrissey. And he only has 1 goal, 14 assists. So they're having a strange season. They're having a very odd season, but they're in it. Hellebuck's playing fantastic. Kyle Connor starts scoring goals. This team, they're not a contender. Let's not get it ahead of ourselves, but it's a good story. A player that I wanted to talk about who I thought was going to have just a massive year. He had a good playoffs last year when he went to the New York Rangers. He was a coveted free agent. Stevie I got him for the Detroit Red Wings. I thought he was going to fit perfectly in that group. Andrew Kopp, he has just been, he's been invisible, Tim, this season so far. I thought he was going to just be first power play. He's going to mesh with Dylan Larkin. It was going to be fantastic. He's got 1 goal, 6 assists, -1. He's played 15 games. I don't know what's going on with Andrew Kopp. I've watched a handful of Detroit Red Wings games because they're an exciting team. He's very forgetful, very unnoticeable. Last year when he was in the playoff run, him and Panarin were so fun to watch. Every single game, those guys were just tic-tac-toeing. It was just beautiful to watch. I don't know what has happened with him in Detroit. Has the money gone to his head? Did he enjoy signing that ticket? And now he's just taking the year off? I don't know what's going on with him, but it's so far, it's not working. Stevie Y very rarely makes a mistake. He's a really good GM. Everybody knows that. But does this end up being one of the worst contracts signed this offseason if Andrew Kopp all of a sudden finishes the year and he's got 10 goals, 20 assists, and he's making $5.625 a year for the next 5 years? That one surprised me because the way he plays the game, I would just assume it would be hard for him to struggle because he's such a good player. And he showed so much last year, to me anyways. So he's the one, other than Jack Campbell, who's just been a complete disaster. He is my biggest disappointment so far.
When you Betfair on the World Cup, you can use our handy app to place your bet builders, and you get your hands on some pretty decent handouts too. Get a completely free £2 bet builder on a World Cup match every day for the first week. That'll come in handy. Betfair.
Max free £2 bet builder per customer per day. Free bet valid on the day it is claimed for the 20th to the 26th of November. Min combined odds of 1.5. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGamblerAware.org.
Here's football legend Jamie Redknapp for Skechers ArchFit footwear.
Okay, I know what you're thinking. ArchFit footwear? Ah, I don't need arch support. Well, I thought the same, and these are still my favorite trainers. You see, Skechers ArchFit are great for virtually everybody. ArchFit was designed by experts, giving you podiatrist-certified arch support and all-day comfort. Plus, I don't wear them just for arch support. I love how they look too. Feel what you've been missing with Skechers ArchFit.
Find Skechers ArchFit footwear for men and women everywhere.
Yeah, but Kopp is the prototypical player who's impacting the game in lots of ways, even when he's not scoring. Like the intensity and tenacity with which he like kills penalties and blocks shots, and he's not a big fighter, but he's scrappy after the whistle and he brings a lot of energy to the team. So it's funny because when you started talking about him, I was like, Kopp, he's not an offensive forward, but in 16 games last year with the Rangers after being traded, he had 8 goals, 10 assists. Like he is a legit skill guy. I think part of it's just right situation, right timing. I don't think he's probably a point per game player, even at his best over the course of a full season, but I do think he's better than this. And I do think you probably want some bigger goals from him. When I think of Andrew Kopp, I think of like who the guy you want on your team in a playoff run. And I think more of like he scores big goals in big moments rather than high volume goals. I don't think he's not going to score your 30 goals, but I do think he's definitely more capable than what he's doing so far this year.
Yeah, I think he had a great year last year. He really did. And maybe I was expecting him to carry that and transition that into a bigger role this year with the Detroit Red Wings. Because he was on Winnipeg. He was buried in the lineup. And he was third line most often. With the Rangers, he really elevated his game. Got first line minutes with Panarin. And he executed. He was scoring. He was playing. He was on the power play. He was doing really good things. And now he's transitioned to Detroit, where I thought he was going to step into that role again. It just hasn't worked so far. We'll see. It's early, but gosh, 1 goal, 5 assists or 6 assists, whatever he has, it's not a great start for a guy who's making almost $6 million, especially going to a new team where you want to make a really good first impression. So I don't know. I thought he was... He's just having the worst, not the worst, but for the signings, the big name signings, I guess Huberto's probably worse because he's making $10 million next year. But another guy from the Red Wings you saw was having a down year, friend of the show, Tim.
Yeah, Mo Sider, and both sides of the ice, really. So after putting up 50 points, obviously, his rookie year, he has just 0 goals, 5 assists on the season. So that's kind of where it caught my eye. And I've actually watched a handful of Red Wings games, and he doesn't look like what we saw last year, at least not for, you know, there's moments where he's just getting beat in his own zone or getting out muscled in the corner, which is not at all the player we saw last season. So I think part of it's just the typical sophomore slump is the reason why that's such a thing. And I think, you know, guys have more accurate expectations for what it's like to play against them, their game planning against them a little bit more and taking them more seriously than they did last year. So I think the part of it, he'll be fine. He's a great player. And I put this out on Twitter a few weeks ago. We had this really good response from @Bullfast, that kind of broke it down with some really interesting numbers here about what's going on with Sider. So part of it, and this is not a number I never really look at. We don't talk about it much in that show, but like breaking down their shifts based on offensive and defensive zone faceoffs. And so Sider is offensive zone is 34.7 as of this conversation last week. I didn't update it for today, but last year, no Red Wing was under 35% and Sider was at 45%. So that's a pretty significant drop off compared to how he's being utilized by his coach compared to last season. And on the flip side of that, it's like he's being treated like he's a no offense shutdown guy rather than a two way or even an offense first defenseman. And I think he's probably a two way guy. I think you'd want him to, like a headman type. And the comparison that this tweeter made was that he's being treated like a young Konstantinov instead of a Lidstrom, which I'm sure the Red Wings fans like. And so I think there's something to be said for this. I think probably the coach, is putting more pressure on him and putting him in more situations. I think primarily because he trusts him in that role, but it does see that, you know, him being still young, still, I think he's 20. It's definitely impacting his stats.
Yeah. I think that has a lot to do with his partner. He's paired up with Ben Chiarot, who is a defensive minded defenseman. You want him on the D zone draw to kind of break it out to, you know, protect the D zone. Their other two pairings, I don't want to say all offensive, but they lean that way with Philip Hronek and Olimata and Osterley and Lindstrom. Oddly enough, they have a Lindstrom, not a Lidstrom. But yeah, Sider will be fine. I think just talking to him, maybe he's pushing a little bit too much, where he had such a fantastic rookie season. Like it was, could not have gone better. And you want to build on that. You want to improve all across the board. But, you know, life's not perfect. What are you going to do? I think he will be and is, you know, a top 10 defenseman in the NHL for the rest of his career. So it's just a blip. He's got 5 assists. It's not the worst thing in the world, but yeah, the Wings could utilize him better. When you're the most frustrating thing, and I never experienced this because I'm not an offensive guy, but I did sometimes, where you go and you grind out a shift and the faceoffs in the offensive zone and you're still fresh, and then you get changed for you. Like, oh, because it's such an advantage to start in the offensive zone, especially if you're a defenseman. You get the whole everything in front of you. If they win the draw, it's even better. Even if they lose the draw, you usually have a play how to, you're pinching, a forward's covering, so you keep it in a lot of the times. But it's just to start in your own zone, shift after shift after shift after shift, that wears on you. It really does wear on you, because you spent all that energy in the defensive zone to get it out. Then you change, because you have to change. You can't go to the offensive zone and risk being caught in your own end for a long shift. So, yeah, I'm sure he's not happy, but he's a good player. I'm not worried about a Mo Sider just yet. Who I am worried about, Tim, is a guy who I said, do not sign this guy to another contract if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins. Why are you doing this? You are just sacrificing your future. Nobody listens to me. Nobody takes me serious. Oh, he's a big stupid goon. We're not listening to him. Ha ha. No, 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 boo boo. You're wrong. I'm right. Crystal Tang is having a terrible season. What is his stats so far this year, Tim? What does he got?
He's got 0 goals. He has 8 assists. He's a -6 on the season. And even though he runs probably, you'd think would be an elite power play, he's only got 2 power play points on the year. Is this a matter of age finally catching up with him?
Yeah. Yeah. He's 35 years old. He's a good hockey player. He's had a well-documented laundry list of injuries all over his body, top to bottom. The guy's always injured. Whined this offseason, you're not respecting me, Pittsburgh, me and Malkin, we deserve more money. They signed each for 6.1. Letang gets a 7-year deal. Malkin gets a 4-year deal. It's great. We're going to just keep playing. We're going to sign these guys. We're going to win Stanley Cups. No, it was such a mistake bringing him back. Good defenseman, Tim. He's past his prime. He's 35, going to be 36 years old. You can tell he's lost a step. He has flashes. He's a great player. Probably will be a Hall of Famer. It was just such a mistake. And I don't know why teams do this. I don't know why. I don't want to gloat or just sit here and have a party because Crystal Tang's not living up to his contract. But it was so easy to predict. The guy's 35 years old. And you sign him to a 7-year contract, 6-year contract? Till he was 41? What do you do? Like, honestly. Whatever. Okay. You get what you pay for. So that's what you get, Ron Hextall. You got bullied into doing this contract. Sid probably came in your office and said, I want Evgeny and I want Chris back. And he said, okay, Sid, sorry. I don't want to do it. Oh, you're doing it, or else I'm leaving. I'm Sidney Crosby. Sidney's $8.7 million contract. He's such a turd. But yeah.
But it wasn't just Letang, it was Malkin. They were kind of hand-in-hand deal. I know they didn't get signed at the same time, but Malkin on the flip side, he's got 16 points, including 7 goals in 15 games this year. And so, you were kind of saying that he wasn't going to be worth it either, and he's worked out beautifully so far this season. So, I mean, you can't – I don't think you could really – it's a little 2020, I think, in hindsight. Look, same.
No, I think Malkin's a bad contract too. They sign him for 4 years. These guys will be 40 years old when their contracts expire. Malkin's a world-class player, but do you think this contract will be a good contract in 3 years when he's 39 and he still has 1 year left on his deal? No. Hextall made a mistake by re-upping these two guys. I know it's for Malkin could have gotten more on the open market, probably. So could have Letang. So they took a little bit of a hit to stay in Pittsburgh. But at what point do you have to move on? We talked about this before. I don't want to get into this again, but are you winning the Stanley Cup this year if you're the Pittsburgh Penguins? Will you win it next year with these two guys on your roster? No. Move on. Get some fresh blood in there. Use that $12 million to go get somebody else. Go get Austin Matthews when he's up next year. Let him play with Crosby for 2 years. How fun would that be? But it is what it is. You had to expect one of them, if not both of them, were going to regress. Malkin's had a great start to the season. He himself is injury prone. So it's just a matter of time before he gets injured or he gets disinterested. Because we all know how disinterested Evgeny Malkin is, and you just let him be and he goes away. Much like when we had Marian Hossa on, how he was saying Dustin Byfuglien or Alexei Yashin or these guys, if they ever applied themselves consistently, they would be the best players in the world. Alexei Yashin really stood out for me. The guy didn't try. Malkin's the same way. He doesn't give it all the time. That's why he won't be one of the best ever. He'll go down as one of, you know, the top 100 players of all time, but not top five. And he has the tools to be that top five player of all time, but he just doesn't apply himself all the time, which is silly to think about because he's still an insanely gifted player, but he doesn't give it all. He doesn't go all in. So I don't know. They're bad contracts. The good value, but you're not going to win the Stanley Cup with these two guys. And they're 35 and 36 years old, and they still have 4 and 6 years left on their deals. Not good. Oh, but Brian Rust signed. You signed me before Brian Rust. Oh, you're such a baby. My goodness. So incredibly soft. But I want to sign a contract first. I don't care what you think. I don't care how you feel, Malkin. I'm calling everybody babies lately. But isn't that wild that grown men are upset that you didn't sign them first? I want to feel more important. You probably think it's perfectly fine.
I don't think that's really quite what he said or how he said it. But
well,
he's looking
he
out
speaks
like,
Russian. His translator said that.
Why aren't I a bigger part of your priorities this summer? Why are you?
You are. You're one of my main priorities. I signed somebody else first. Huh?
I don't have a contract yet. But it doesn't feel like it.
Let's talk about it.
You know what I'm saying? Like you're signing all these other guys. You're telling me I'm important. You're signing other guys before me. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, I have to sign other players too. On our jersey, does it say the Evgeny Malkins on the front, or does it say the Pittsburgh Penguins?
Okay.
Last time I checked, we had a big stinking logo of a penguin, not your face. This is a team, Evgeny. You're not always going to be first in line. Such a baby. My goodness, you're making millions of dollars. The egos are very fragile with hockey players. I know this better than anybody because I used to have an ego. Then I had 7 daughters and I have 0 ego whatsoever. If I don't walk out of the room looking halfway decent, I just get roasted by 5 kids. What are you wearing that? Your breath stinks. Your hair looks terrible. What happened to your face? My goodness, I'm going back to bed, you guys. Just insane.
Wait, this is not relevant, but I saw this on like a TV show. So quick question about your kids. You come home from work in a couple hours. Someone's crying. Who is it and why?
Oh, my wife. She's upset at some of
The girls.
Oh, no, it's always my wife. She's upset at one of the kids and doesn't know how to handle it. No, one of the girls, it's... one of them. It's always somebody different. I don't have a consistent crier. I don't tolerate crying. So I say this a lot, and I'm probably a bad parent for this, but you could kind of see me saying this. If someone's crying, I go, are you bleeding? Did someone do something really bad to you? Because if it's not one of those two things, you got to stop crying. I don't want to hear it. I don't want to deal with it. Life is hard. Move on. I say that weekly to my kids because they cry like, oh, like someone, you know, she was mean to me and she took that. I'm like, are you hurt? Was it egregiously bad? No. Are you feel like it's just your feelings got hurt? Let's talk about it. I don't want to deal with this crying stuff. I'm not that parent, Tim. I couldn't. You would be a great parent for my kids because you guys would have feeling sessions. Are you feeling safe? Are you feeling safe to talk to me?
Let's take a walk.
Yeah.
Let's go over here. Just the two of us. We'll have some cookies and talk about our feelings.
Yeah. You did nothing wrong. Everybody's great. You are all perfect. Little angels. Ugh. No, thank you. All right. Who else? One more player, Tim, and then we'll move on to something else.
We're
really talking about a lot of stuff today.
Well, it's funny because we talked about, okay, the next player, Brock Besser, 0 goals.
Oh, no, Brock. Oh, no.
You think of Brock Besser, you think if there's one thing that he does, it's scoring goals. He's got 0 on the season. He missed a couple of games, but he's played 10 games. And talk about being part of the problem when the Vancouver Canucks can't buy a win. They lost against the Bruins last night. And you got your, if there's a guy in the team who's a goal scorer, it's him. And he's not finding the back of the net. And so what interested me, I started looking at other players that have 0 goals on the year. Matthew Barzal has 0 goals, which is also crazy. But what's crazy with him, now going back to last season, he's got 21 straight assists without scoring a goal, which is a second, I think, of all time. But the record will never be broken. 5 or 6 years ago, Daniel Sedin scored 37 straight assists without scoring a goal, which is pretty special. But back to Brock. Yeah, he's a goal scorer who's not scoring. And I watched the Canucks last night. They're not a good team, John. I don't know what it is. They're not good. The defense, probably most of all. The Bruins felt like they were on the power play for half the game.
The Canucks are bad. How long until I can't believe Boudreau still has his job? Do you think they're not firing because no other coach is taking that job? What coach in their right mind who has any aspirations of being a coach for the rest of their career would take the Vancouver Canucks' job? There's no coach that I can think of would want to walk into this locker room. It's just insane how bad this team is right now. They're so bad. It's criminal how bad. And you mentioned it. They do everything bad. Yeah. Their power play, their goaltending, their defense, their offense, everything is bad for the Vancouver Canucks right now. Thatcher Demko, garbage this year. I feel bad for Thatcher. He's a good goaltender. And Brock Besser. What are you going to do? They re-upped him this past year, 6.65. What do you think JT Miller's thinking? He just re-upped 8 years, $8 million, $64 million. Does he regret signing that big ticket? And how happy is Bo Horvat to get out of this dumpster fire next year? He's going to be a UFA. He is just skipping out of town at the end of the season. Can't wait to get out of there.
Yeah, you're stuck with him. I feel like the Canucks and Miller both regret the deal and they're both stuck with each other. And there's no move in that contract, I don't think. And so I will say he was one of the players to watch last night. You did notice him. He was making things happen, maybe trying to do too much. Cause even like there were just little moments that you just watch these guys. It's like the chemistry isn't there. They're not finishing. The power play didn't look good. The penalty kill wasn't great. I don't know what JT Miller must be thinking, but he can't be happy.
I don't know if anybody's happy in the Vancouver Canucks. That Pod Colson, the guy he said he was going to watch out for him this year. He got into a fight with that Greer kid from Boston, just got his doors beat off. You know what's bad when you're Russians trying to spark your team and he's just getting destroyed by some guy. So just a punching bag. But anyways, when I'm a punching bag, I need some ice. And I get my ice from DoorDash, Tim. It's not just food that DoorDash delivers. It's not just liquids. Whatever you want. They get me bags of ice. They get me some peas. They get me a steak. I throw them on my eyes. I throw them on my nose after I'm in a big fight. I had Men's League last night. 4 goals. No big deal. Wanted some beers. DoorDash. Ding dong. Use promo code GlovesDDUS. Got myself 25% off free delivery. It was fantastic. DoorDash is the company that does everything and they do it quickly and they do it right. Get yourself some food, some drinks, some ice, whatever you want. DoorDash is there to get you what you want. And if you live in Canada, we got a promo code for you too. It's just GlovesDD. In the USA, it's GlovesDDUS. Use promo code and you get 25% off free delivery. DoorDash, everybody. All right, Tim, time for some quick hits.
Yeah, there's a couple here that I think grab my attention. Jamie Benn is kind of, I wouldn't say he's resurging quite, but he's having a great start to the season. And we talked about how important he is to the Stars. They're second place in their division, technically tied with points, but they play more games. He's 6 goals, 5 assists, 11 points in the season. And sorry, in the last 6 games, including a hat trick a few games ago, he had another game 2 games later where he scored 2 goals. He's getting into fights. He's being kind of the player that he was 5, 6 years ago when he was at his prime and was maybe the best power forward in the league. So good to see him back doing his thing. There was another fight over the weekend. Did you see this in the East Coast League with these two guys knocking each other out simultaneously? Fantastic. Have you seen something like that before?
Never a double, not on the ice. I've seen it like in UFC. I've seen it in boxing. Never on the ice. It was pretty neat. Two little guys going at it, throwing them. I loved it. And then, boink, both got it right on the button. Pretty funny.
Yeah, if I ever get into a fight, there's no chance. Even if I knock the other guy out, I'm also getting knocked out. Like, there's no chance I don't go down in some way or form, would you say?
It's the first guy who pops up who wins. It's like Rocky and who did he fight? Was it Apollo Creed or something? The first guy who gets up wins.
Yeah, I've never seen those movies. Yeah.
You've never seen Rocky?
None of them. No.
Oh my gosh, Tim. What's the matter? Should I watch them? Get all of them. They're so good. Rocky 3, one of the best ones ever with Ivan Drago. So incredibly entertaining.
More tough news. Columbus Blue Jackets, after a horrendous start to the season, now Zach Werenski's done for the year, for the regular season, unless they make the playoffs. But he's got a separated shoulder and a torn labrum. And then just this morning, Patrick Laine's out 3 to 4 weeks with another upper body injury. So the hits keep coming for those guys.
Laine cannot get out of Columbus fast enough. He hates that team. He hates that city. He wants out so incredibly bad. It would not surprise me. That's the thing, though. Who's going to take Patrick Laine? What he's done the last few years, can you really trust him to come in and be a good player for your team? I don't think you can. He does not want to be there. Columbus is a bad spot right now, and he makes 8.7 for the next 4 years.
You got to think it's going to be a short-term deal, right? He's got to prove something, Laine.
He just signed 4 years, $8 million, 8.7. So he's there. Until 25, 26, that season's over. He's there for a long time. So, I don't know, Columbus. I like their GM, Yarmo, because he was just such a gambler at the trade deadline. And he went out and he made things happen. I don't know what he's doing with this team right now. He gives Gudbranson that big deal. He brings Johnny Gaudreau in on a decent deal. But I just don't know what he's doing with this team. There's no – it doesn't make sense to me. When you're building a team, do you start with Johnny Gaudreau?
Connor Bedard. You're going to turn that team around.
Your first line centerman's Jack Roslovic? Boone Jenner? You know? I don't know where they go from here. They're in a tough spot because I don't see a way out from where they're headed. They don't have any shining bright stars who they can just kind of circle the wagons around, you know? The Werenski might be the only one. Now he's hurt for the season. Well, who knows how this is going to affect him long term.
You don't think Gaudreau and Laine are stars to build around?
No, I don't. No, definitely not. No. And they're great players. I'm building my team around defensemen and centermen. I say this every single year. Not around wingers. I can find scoring wingers. They're easier to find than good two-way centermen and solid defensemen. Every deadline, what do teams want? Centermen and defensemen. That's it. Those are the guys. Those are prize acquisitions. You're giving up first rounders for defensemen. You're not giving up first rounders for scoring wingers. So no, not Johnny, not Patrick. My centermen cannot be Boone Jenner, Jack Roslovic, and Cole Sillinger if I expect to win anything. I don't care how good Johnny Gaudreau is, not winning anything. So, Columbus, they got a lot. They got a long way to go before they're competitive again. I feel bad for Johnny Gaudreau. He is signed up for just a decade of futility in Columbus because they got nothing exciting in the works. All right. One more just dagger in the Canucks, Tim. What are you going to say?
The Canucks have surrendered at least 3 goals in 15 out of their 16 games this season. I'm going to say that again. In 16 games they played, they let in 3 or more in 15 out of the 16. This is crazy. Crazy, crazy.
You would think they'd be the worst team in the league for goals against, but no, it's the Anaheim Ducks.
Yeah.
That division is so bad. It's incredible, the Pacific Division. It's just oppressive, these teams, the goals against averages on these teams. Okay. San Jose is not much better. Edmonton gives up a ton of goals. The LA Kings give up a ton of goals. The Vegas Golden Knights just hit the jackpot going in that division. They really did.
Yeah, but you look at the league standings across the entire league. Vegas is in second. That's Pacific Division. Kings are in fourth. That's Pacific Division. And then Seattle is tied for fifth. That's also Pacific Division. I don't think it's like a highs and lows thing. Like the best teams.
No,
the worst
because
teams.
They get to pick on Anaheim, Vancouver, San Jose all the time. Those are just tap-in points. And then they go play Arizona, Chicago, and St. Louis. So you get the added benefit. The bottom 3 and 4 in the Pacific and Central are terrible. When you look at the bottom 3 and 4 in the Atlantic and the Metro, it's Pittsburgh, it's Washington, it's Philly, it's Montreal, Buffalo, Ottawa, Detroit. I would much rather play Arizona and Vancouver and Anaheim and St. Louis than Detroit and Buffalo and Ottawa and Pittsburgh and Washington. So just the top to bottom strength of each division, it's obvious. It's so obvious. So yeah, good for Seattle. They're going to really be in it at the end of the season. All right, Tim, let's gamble. Tired of this. I want to gamble. I want to win some money. What are we doing?
I'm going to take a page out of your book with tonight's picks. There's 4 games tonight. I'm going to bet on each of them. Then I'm going to parlay all 4. We'll see how this works out. Okay. So I'm going with the Islanders, the Kings, the Hurricanes, and the Avalanche. And they are all favored except for the King. They're the underdogs. But I like them to win tonight. So I'm going to each of those 4 teams and a parlay them all and collect about $1,000 in winnings tomorrow.
Wow, Tim, that's a big bet. I'm going to go take a page out of your book. I'm going to go 1 game, the St. Louis Blues, the Colorado Avalanche, the over or under set at 6. I'm going to put a ton of money on the over. That's it. I'm going to put a ton of money on the over, and I'm going to bet 1 game, see how much I win. That's all I'm going to do. You can do your parlay. You can do your 4. I have just gotten burned the last couple of weeks of just losing 1 and winning a little bit here and there. But I'm going to plop in a big bet, and I'm going to win a big bet, the over, and away we go. The St. Louis Blues, the Colorado Avalanche, the over-unders, or should I do the Hurricanes, Blackhawks? What should I do? Or the Islanders, Senators, Kings, Flames. Which one do you think is going to be over 6?
I think all but Kings, Flames could be over.
I agree. Hurricanes are a defensive team. St. Louis just can't score. I think that's why that line is so low. They don't score at all. So I'm going Blues, Avalanche. I'm going to stay with my gut. I'm going over. Lock it in. Final answer, Reg. That's it, Tim.
You are no
that's
deal.
It.
All right.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Nope.
All right. Everybody jump on BetUS. Enjoy the action. Get a 125% deposit bonus if you sign up today. Other than that, we'll see everybody on Wednesday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.
Delivered by DoorDash.
When you bet fair on the World Cup, you can use our handy app to place your bet builders, and you get your hands on some pretty decent handouts too. Get a completely free £2 bet builder on a World Cup match every day for the first week. That'll come in handy. Betfair.
Max free £2 bet builder per customer per day. Free bet valid on the day it is claimed for the 20th to the 26th of November. Min combined odds of 1.5. T's and C's apply. 18 plus. BeGamblerAware.org.
The world is our home. So make yourself comfortable wherever you are.
with Voco Hotels. Feel at home from the moment you arrive, leaving you to unwind your way. Not only do our attentive hosts look after you, but they also look out for the planet too. Like at Voco St David's Cardiff, where our guests can hire electric bikes to explore the Welsh capital in a fun and green way. Come on in. Search Voco Hotels today.